Hello everyone and welcome to the Constructive Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 344th episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your Jim Razor host, Mason, joined by my Jordan Blinker co-host, Allie. Allie, how you doing?
Did you really just introduce yourself as Jim Razor?
Yeah. Well, at first I was like trying to figure out like what to do because I got the little like funny intro every time that, you know, it kills. People always just, they're cracking up at them. It's actually dangerous. People have learned that they can't listen to the show while they're driving to work. They got to start when they start at work. That way they're in the driveway safe. Because, you know, it just kills.
So comical genius, Mason Clark.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to brag, but John Mulaney learned everything from a school, but I watch John Mulaney videos, so I've learned it by osmosis. So, it's pretty impressive. But yeah, I don't know. Jim Racer's great. Room T hit second on ladder yesterday. I've been trying for weeks to get you in on Jim Razor, and today felt like the day. And so I came in. I knew you had to be here per your contract.
Well, today's not the day.
Cool. Yeah, no doubt. I was just kidding. I didn't mean it. Like, you know, I was just joshing with you, you know? Lamau, AO, XD so quirky. Yeah, but today we're going to talk all about Standard. It is the Standard Breakdown episode. You know, last week we had a little short one, like what happened with the ban list. And we could have, like, we thought about talking about, like, you know, like what excites us when playing Standard potentially coming up. But it was just so wild, so new. We just want to kind of get the episode out there and do this sort of thing this week. And luckily for us, Allie, this format has turned out to be, as of right now, great. We've had a bunch of different decks in the last week be the top deck. It feels like we've had 3 weeks of metagame. Metagame hasn't been solved yet. And we have all these sweet decks. So I'm super excited to talk about Standard today. How about you?
Yeah, for sure. Standard is so interesting right now. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to get more into that later. But first, there's always improving. You know, it's the main point of the show. Always trying to get better. And Allie, how did you always improve this?
I think I'm just like currently in an always improving moment of I have my split for Rivals this weekend and I feel just so completely lost. So I'm just spending, I guess the rest of, well, like I've been spending a lot of time just like thinking about like the theory behind the decks and trying to think of what I'm expecting in the format, because I do think the format is falling into like kind of like a cyclical pattern, which we can talk about later. So a lot of it is like diving into theory, and then I want to just spend the rest of the day testing out two different decks I think are potentially the right way to go this weekend. But
Jim Razor and then Jim Razor Tribal.
Ooh, actually, no Gem Razor.
Yeah, once again, I was just kidding. You know, hey.
Haha, good joke.
Yeah. Thanks, Allie. I knew you'd like it. notice me. And yeah, I agree. It's also weird because, like, unlike other tournaments that, like, happen on a weekend, right? Like, there would be three more days of testing, right? So, like, you might be anxious heading towards the weekend for a standard tournament, but, like, you would still have those 3 days, and a lot can happen in 3 days, right? Like, even if it's just you getting more comfortable with the deck. And that could still happen over the next 3 days, like getting comfortable with the deck you choose to play. But you have to choose it now, which is like a weird, like, the split metagame is like time capsuled by only 3 days, which is better than before where it was like a week and a half. But, like, you know, it's so interesting that, like, this is like the Friday, you know? Like, we kind of hit, for y'all at least, the metagame's endpoint for a little bit, which is an interesting experience, at least to say the least. Like, I haven't experienced anything like that before.
Yeah, it'll be interesting too, because even if we Like, when I settle on a deck, there's still, like, 3 more days, so my testing after that might even be a little weird as well, because it's just, like, different. Like the meta might just continue to shift, too, and then I'm playing, like, an outdated deck or something.
Yeah, or, like, just something new even pops up. Like, even if it, like, you know, it's kind of cyclical, like we're going to talk about later here, but, like, what if mono white Eldrazi pop up, you know, like, it's just, like, turns out mono white plus the colorless cards is like the thing to be doing. And it's like, well, that might be true, but literally no one at the split's gonna be playing this deck, so like concede. Very weird position to be in, for sure. My always improving moment for this week was just continuing to try out all this different stuff, and with standard right now the way it is, and so it's moving so quickly and it's such a healthy place. It's a lot like around when I first started playing Magic, where this is like a lot to do and a lot to shift and bounce between, and just trying to always check my biases and like what we're at, and having to do that like on a daily basis recently has been really interesting. Where in the past, because to be honest, for the last, you know, year and a half, things haven't been the healthiest really, you kind of needed to check like weekly. Like, there just were so many strong things, you kind of knew what like the decks were, and you were kind of trying to pick out, right, which of the, like, you know, Bant, Recto Sacrifice, like mono red, like which of these decks am I playing, you know, that sort of thing. And it's just been like daily here, which has been super interesting, because there have been days where I feel like I'm on top of things, and there's days where I feel like I'm behind, and it's just a hyperbolic time chamber version of it, which has been interesting and kind of hard to get my footing on, but you know, this is the way things are. I much prefer it like this than the other way. So let's move on to the rest of the show. We don't have a Patreon question this week. The question we had related to standard. So if you want to be a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg and you can support the show and ask questions. Normally we would answer the question, but it's kind of like, what do you like in standard right now? And it's like, well, we're going to talk about that the whole episode. So your Patreon question is the episode. How exciting.
Cool.
Yeah. Wow. What a real treat. And another way to support the show, though, is you can go to Oasis Games and use code CCMTG at checkout to get 4% off your order. And use code Would That Be Good to get 15% off your first order. And, you know, pick up some stuff. Maybe pick up some commander cards. Magic cards are currently on the down right now when it comes to price, but I'm sure they'll pop back up post COVID, so that'll be exciting. You get to play with your friends and have all these sweet, sweet new decks as I stare at my Uros to my right that I'll haven't played with and probably won't play with until they rotate out of standard and might get banned in every format before we get there. But it's cool. The deal is so good, I can't complain. Allie, great to talk standard.
Yeah.
Well, so do you want to talk
so much?
There's so much. You kind of want to talk about like the cyclical nature of things, like we were talking about a little bit before the show, to kind of give a basis of where we're kind of feeling on things big picture wise before we kind of hop into deck to deck.
I think the format, while there are like a bunch of different decks, can kind of be grouped into a little bit of different categories, being Yorion, green decks, and then like mill decks. And then I think they all just kind of like go in a little triangle and beat each other. So the format then comes, especially like for my split or for a tournament, of if these are like the only decks you're expecting, like what exactly are you expecting? Are you expecting there to be a bunch of like mono green and like Golgari Adventures, like the green decks? Okay, then you should probably play a Yorion deck. Yorion is kind of like the hot spice right now, so like maybe then you want to play like the mill decks instead, and etc. etc.
And the wheel keeps turning and turning and turning. Yeah, it's I agree with that. I think that's kind of where we're at right now in the metagame. And I think with that kind of like as our guiding light, you know, of like what we think about the metagame, I think it's important that we like kind of talk about some of these other decks that, you know, a week ago this time were some of the bigger players in standard that don't really quite fit that mold. And I think the biggest one that maybe people are hearing, let's talk about and not mention, is Rakdos Midrange, the Kroxa decks. You know, it looked to me that maybe Kroxa was one of the strongest things going on in Standard, and it probably is one of the stronger things, but it's not really mentioned there. Allie, what don't you like about the Rakdos midrange decks?
I think it kind of fell out of favor when the format shifted away from completely rogues. Obviously, rogues is still going to be one of the most powerful things to be doing right now. It's cheap on wild cards, so people are playing it all over Arena still, but like there's now like Yorion decks, and already kind of struggled against like Golgari Adventures and Mono Green. So it's kind of just like stuck in this place where like, okay, you can beat rogues, but what about everything else in the format?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good against rogues, and it's just so meh against the rest of the field. And it's interesting because it kind of has like the Jund dynamic where you could beat other decks. And, you know, obviously, like, being a little hyperbolic here, like, the deck does win against decks that aren't rogues. It just kind of has a real struggle against those decks in a way that is, like, disheartening and makes me not want to play the deck, right? Like, I can't bring that deck if people are playing things like Mono Green, which in theory would be, like, a pretty good matchup, but, like, just doesn't play out that way ever. Or, like, if they're playing, like, any Yorion deck, they are going to drown you in value. Like, there's just no chance. So it's just such an awkward position for Rakdos midrange. And it kind of sucks because I think that deck's actually pretty fun to play and play against for the most part. Yeah, I'm super low on that deck as well right now. It needs something to change or something to change in the metagame, but it's just, like, not as impressive as it was looking a week ago today. Which is wild to talk about. You know, it's been 1 week. Like, last Tuesday, a lot of people were saying Rakdos midrange is, like, it and rogues are, like, the decks right now, you know? Super, super funny to think about. Especially how Magic's been, where, like, that wouldn't be the case. Like, it would just be, you know, we'd have a couple weeks of Rakdos midrange being the best thing, or we're trying to find the other powerful cards.
Yeah.
So kind of along these lines, what do you think about Golgari Adventures? Does that fall into the green deck camp for you? Because for me, it does not. But I don't know if we actually clarified that when we were talking off show.
I mean, for me, as part of like the cyclical format that I was kind of bringing up earlier, I think it does, just because I think it's really good against like red, black, and rogues. And then I think it just... I don't think it can really beat the Yorion deck. So even if it's not like mono green aggro or mono green food or whatever, it still kind of follows the same kind of pathings, at least with like my own testing and then some of the guys on Lotus Box.
Yeah, it's weird to me about Golgari Adventures, because I've played the deck a pretty decent amount, and I've played against it a pretty decent amount. And I've watched a lot of people play it, because there was just a hot minute last Wednesday where it felt like everyone and their mother played Green-Black Adventures or Golgari Adventures. There's just, like, you couldn't escape it, you know, for, like, a day. And the deck feels very medium. It can beat down, and it can grind. And it, like, has aspects to do that for sure. But it doesn't do either of those things particularly well. Which is fine. Like mid-range decks do this a lot, right? Where, like, they can be the beat down where they can grind. But I just found that it wasn't super great at either. And maybe that's, like, you know, just the way the matchups were playing out, or, like, the things I saw coming to False Biases. What do you think about that statement? Do you agree that, like, green-black kind of has, like, a mopey version of, like, beat down, a mopey version of control, but, like, together that's fine, or, like, with the metagame that's okay?
I think the deck's really interesting. Obviously, it's one of my favorite archetypes, but I think it, like, it does really well because you can kind of shift the game to whatever you want it to be. Like, you can be a more aggressive strategy. You can kind of, like, sit and grind through a bunch of decks and accrue card advantage. I think it has been struggling against the Yorion decks because it just... the natural card advantage from all the, like, Yorion flicker stuff ends up being a lot better than just drawing cards from Edgewell Innkeeper and the Great Henge, because you still have to, like, cast spells. Like, you have to pay mana for everything. And then the Yorion decks are like, pay 5 mana and do all these things 5 times or something.
Yeah, Yorion kind of doubles your mana investment already with those decks, which is powerful, to say the least. You know. Okay, yeah, that's cool. I can buy that.
You could also like shift it to be more what you were saying too, of this more like controlly kind of thing, because there is a lot of removal. You're playing a pile of removal now and can function at instant speed most times, but
fair. Would you say that the hinge is one of the like the pillars of the format, like the Great Hinge?
I definitely think it was. I think it's still pretty important. Like, the green white Yorion deck is still playing the Great Henge. I think some of the Bant lists are playing the Great Henge, obviously. Mm-hmm. All the green decks are playing the Great Henge, so it's clearly like a big player in the format, but it's also kind of like, I guess, hard to get to resolve against like blue white or rogues or like, I think overall it's a really big thing in the format, I'd say.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know about you, but I keep adjusting things. Like, I kind of had to like adjust the way Magic was for a little bit, where like pillar meant like Uro, you know, like unbeatable in every deck. But I think the Great Hinge is like a healthy one, and I think that card is very good and does define a lot of like how the green decks plan to like stay in it, and it allows all the green decks to also be grindy. Like, they, by the nature of the Great Hinge, if you resolve the Great Hinge, your green deck now has like an absurd amount of value added to it that it could not have without that card, and allows the decks to play like pretty intense, like resource intense games that they normally just could not do. And then in decks like Yorion, where like the flickering makes the Great Hinge trigger, it just like becomes another haymaker you have to answer. It's just very powerful. But before we get into like those kind of, you know, more of the cycle of decks here, there's a few other outliers I want to talk about. What do you think about mono red, the cleave? Do you believe?
Not in mono red.
Do you believe in the cleave anywhere?
I am curious about Gruul.
Okay.
I don't know if I have enough time to test Gruul in the next 24 hours before decklist submissions, but Canister streaming Gruul, a couple other people are thinking Gruul is like secretly good, so I feel like I gotta find time for it somewhere to at least try it out.
Yeah, I feel like the thing that's stopping Gruul is Gruul's mana. So if you can figure out how to make like that work, where like build your deck in a way where like the pips aren't super color intensive, or like maybe it's just adding Lotus Cobra, I don't know, but like if you can do that, your deck would be super strong. Okay, that's interesting. All right, but back to mono red. You said not in red, so I had to get you off there. So, so you're low on mono red too. You're not believing.
No, I don't see myself registering mono red. Maybe I'm like what's the word? Maybe I'm too like stuck in the past and was like privileged with like good mono red decks in the past, but like I look at these mono red decks in the past like year or so and they just like haven't been good. I miss my Swift Spears, I miss my Hazorettes and Soul Scar Mages.
Yeah, I just feel like there's a lot of removal and a lot of playing to the board right now, which are both not great for mono red, and you don't really have a lot of things that wear the cleave well. You have like Phoenix of Ash, which like can wear the cleave well if you can pump it as well, and you have Annex, and I guess technically if you have Torbran as well in play, your medium-sized creatures become better, but like that's asking a lot with like the parameters I set around the metagame, and just like, it's so easy. Like, even when I played a lot of mono green this format. Mono green, you know, is not flush on removal. It's got 8 spells, and only 4 of them you can use in instant speed. But, like, if you ever just hold a ram through up for, like, the annex getting cleaved, it's very easy to just, like, take their board apart. Because cleave just forces them to, like, attack all in. It's just so, it's almost gimmicky. Like, mono red is, like, it feels like the most, like, yeah, you play mono red to try and cheese people. It's been in years. Like, it does just does not seem powerful at all with the way people are building their decks. And they're also, Aaron Barrage tweeted this, and I have to agree, why do mono red players hate playing lands and hate playing good cards? Like, what? Like, not every deck, mono red deck, has to be 20 lands. Like, before counting, like, Spikefield Hazard. You could have, like, a 24 bigger red deck that, like, tries to, you know, play a dragon and then cleave. I don't know, like, that much there. I haven't looked into that because it seems kind of like if I was doing this, I could do it with, like, Gruul maybe if I was going to play more land, you know, and, like, have a Questing Beast plus cleave. But I just don't get, like, why people are playing mono red outside of, like, enjoying it. Like, from a tactical point in the metagame, I just feel like mono red is not there in it, like, any sort of way.
Oh, yeah. I just, like, obviously mono red is the chance to, like, cheese people out or whatever, but it really just seems like the format is mostly mid-range right now, and historically, like, aggro just hasn't functioned against mid-range that well.
Yeah. Just doesn't super line up that well. Also, the Great Henge being in those decks makes it, you know, kind of awkward. Like, your spell is much easier to resolve. It plays to the battlefield and gains you life. So, like, if you can manage the cleave, they just, like, every turn they have this insurmountable life gain and card advantage that they can never win. It's a beat to be mono red. But, you know, they had some stuff before. Their time has come and gone, though, I think. At least until they put good cards in their deck. I don't know. Like, I disagree with Aaron. Like, the Kuma Hellhound and the 1/1 that if you have an equipment on it, it will, like, ping them or whatever. It's just, like, treat yourself. You know, you don't have to play those kind of cards. I don't know. That's for all my homies out there. Love yourself. Teemer Ramp. This is kind of the deck that has popped up in the last day-ish or so. We saw Brad Nelson win the LFM Streamer Showdown with it. We saw it do pretty well. I want to say in a Red Bull event, but as soon as I said that, it sounded like the wrong event. But we've seen this kind of ramp deck appear that, you know, tries to play a lot like the old Teemer Ramp decks that escaped the wilds with the plan of, like, overwhelming your opponent with card advantage. But this time it can't do that as consistently because you lack Escape to the Wilds. But you're just trying to put in Terror of the Peaks and trigger your Terror of the Peaks with, like, Beanstalk Giant, Bone Crusher, that sort of stuff. So, Allie, what are your thoughts on the Teemer Ramp deck? Because it didn't quite fit into our little wheel there.
Yeah, I was going to say, this Teemer Ramp deck, I don't really know how to place it or anything. Like, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know how you feel about this, so let me know what you think. But I saw it kind of rose up on the same day that, like, the Yorion decks did. Like, Gottlieb tweeted about green-white Yorion on Friday. Strosky played a green-white Yorion that was similar in nature but different than that and won the CFB thing. And then on that same day, that's when, like, the Teemer deck appeared. And I felt like the Teemer deck was trying to do a similar thing to Yorion when it came to outvaluing the adventure decks and going over them in a way. But it does it in a way that I think is more susceptible. Like, you need your Cobras to kind of live to get these, like, really powerful draws. And your cards are fine on their own, but they're not as, like... Like, with the green-white deck, you have a lot of, like, synergy-heavy draws. And if you ever draw Yorion, your deck, like, becomes not unbeatable, but, like, supercharged, right? And that deck feels like the same way. But instead of Yorion, it's Terror of the Peaks. And when you hit Terror of the Peaks, it's not as insane as Yorion because you don't get that instant value. Like, your next turn's really good, but that turn isn't. You know, and I think that's kind of a big differentiator in me is that you kind of have to actually untap with the Teemer deck to get these kind of more impactful draws.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say on it. I think what I just said there, that's like trying to do a similar thing, doesn't do it as immediately, makes me a little hesitant. I think that's kind of all my thoughts on the deck. And if it could become more impactful when it plays Terror, or maybe, like, if there was a way to more consistently Terror into Beanstalk Giant on the next turn, so you can, like, 7 them, attack for 5 in the air, like, get them dead, I'd be more interested. But currently I'm a little hesitant. Especially since the deck does seem like, I think it plays Cultivate and stuff, but, like, it also leans on Cobra to get some more busted draws. And there's a lot of removal, like we've talked about. So Cobra is, you know, we really are hyper aware of, like, early aggression and early creatures in this format, thanks to things like Edgekeeper, like the milk crab from Rogues, Lurrus, like those sort of things are all kind of making us aware of early creatures. And so I feel like Cobra kind of, while it hasn't been a big player, gets lumped into there. Even though, you know, it's kind of like when you play Among Us, right? It's like, I wasn't even at medical. It's like, yeah, but you're sus. What were you doing? You're in that area. So it kind of gets caught in the crossfire. So not a huge fan. I think that does it, though, for decks that don't fall into our category. Am I missing anything, Allie? Is there anything in your mind before I move on that would fit in, like, the outside the wheel category?
Jeskai Transmog.
Let's talk about Jeskai Transmog real quick. You're right. Pulliam got 10th in the standard challenge this past weekend on Modo. Got 10th because Shadow Skull Smashing is bugged on a Mitgo, and so could only kill one creature. A
little Mitgo. Awkward.
Yeah, Mitgo. MTGO. Stop. Well, what would you like for me to call it, Allie?
Modo?
Mm. So, M-O-D-O. yeah, but what do you think about this deck, Allie? Have you got to play it any? I've played some of the deck a little bit.
I played a little bit. I think I played it about a week ago, so definitely outdated from what Pulliam registered in the tournament, but it always just felt like Dream Trawler just, like, wasn't good enough. I don't know. Maybe I'm just stuck in what the, like, Luka decks used to be. But just, it feels so underwhelming in a lot of times. I don't know.
Yeah, I realize that maybe because the deck didn't top 8 in the way Magic works, a lot of people probably don't actually know about the deck. So I guess I should say what it is real quick. So it's a lot like the old Jeskai Luka decks. But you're more control-based. And you're getting Dream Trawlers instead of Agent of Treacheries. And then the big get that Pulliam kind of figured out before the event was that you don't actually play Luka. You play Transmogrify because it's a mana cheaper and makes your mana cleaner. So you get to trim out some red sources. So you're really like a blue-white control deck that's splashing for Transmogrify, a couple of the Narset 4 Planeswalker, and a few spot removal spells. And I actually think that that's one of the weaker parts of the deck. To be honest, I think like the Transmogrify get a Dream Trawler into play is good, but the rest of your spells don't line up weirdly with other decks, and they kind of need them to play into that way. And the cards that like aren't, well, the draws aren't like turn 4 I have a Dream Trawler in play, turn 5 I'm smacking you, just don't impress that much. And while you can play a control game plan, this format is really value heavy. Got a lot of things going on there, so if you can't get the Dream Trawler to actually put a clock on them early, I don't think you can actually like sit there and beat all of this card advantage that, like, honestly, Dimir, Mono Green, Golgari, all the decks, Yorion, all those decks provide so much card advantage. I just actually don't think that your mid-range or your control plan can consistently do it without a Dream Trawler to mitigate maybe life loss or the cards that you need. So it's awkward. I don't know. Transmogrify, though, what a card.
It's definitely a card.
Yeah. It does seem like Dream Trawler should be a player in the format, but it's just so hard to tap out and get there, you know? It's wild.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a spot where, like, it will absolutely beat a lot, or, like, a handful of decks in the format, but, like, the matches I ended up playing, it just, like, wasn't as impactful as I wanted it to be.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, it's just not 100% all there. All right, well, let's get on to the wheel. I feel like the only way to talk about this is to start with how they appeared and work from there. So let's start with the first quarter of our wheel with Dimir Rogues. So the Rogues deck has kind of solidified to be very much like Seth's version from the Grand Finals, where it's like, you're going to play Thieves Guild Enforcer, Soaring Thought Thief. Oh, I don't know if I can say that. Crab and Lurrus. And then you got a bunch of card advantage and you kind of figure it out from there. So, Allie, when we're talking about Rogues, that's the one you're talking about as well, right? Just to make sure we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Yep. And this deck has kind of become the default control deck of sorts. And it's interesting because you have, like, these beatdown draws that, like, a couple early Thieves Guild Enforcers and Soaring Thought Thieves can give you. And that will put a lot of pressure on your opponent. But also, like, those things double as, like, fine removal spells. And, like, they work towards your mill, which helps, like, your more powerful cards, like,
into the story activate or you're drowning the locks. And then in the matchups where you're trying to deck them, they also just, you know, they just work towards that. So it's a very interesting, like, you have a little bit of column A and attack, and a little bit of column B and milling. But it's fine because of the way, like, all the cards work together. And it's very interesting, right? Like, that's not a thing we see that normally works out in decks.
Yeah. Rogues has been one of the most infuriating decks to me. And I think I've probably just been doing myself a disservice by not playing it. Because I'm normally really good at the flash decks. Oh my god, but like flash plus mill is the most infuriating combination I've ever come across.
It is a rather like frustrating dynamic. Just like the mill thing. One of the things I love about mill is that it really gets these like, if like it invokes an experience of the player. Like one player is like, oh, I killed your best card. I milled over, you know, your Dream Trawlers or whatever, your Transmogrify deck. And the other player is like, this isn't even doing anything, or this is stupid. It didn't matter. I kind of like that, especially when it's in person, but online it's kind of lame. But yeah, the Dimir deck, it does seem to be doing really well. I don't know if you looked at the standard challenge for this last weekend, but it won, came in third, fifth, and sixth. So like, it was half the top eight. So Dimir Rogues does seem to be a all-star player in the current format. And it's a deck that has just a lot of really strong draws to it. And one of its hardest matchups for Rakdos midrange, as we talked about, has a really hard time competing with like the other bigger decks in the format. And as such, you could play Rakdos, and if you hit the Dimir players, right, you're going to have these really like swingy games and the deck's going to look bad. But in reality, what happens is it's like, yeah, and then most of the time those decks get beat out, and then I've got this like lean machine against these other decks. And if someone's trying to value me out, well, Rune Crab is coming in to just completely mill them out. It's insane how good
that is. Anything that gets Sandy Dog MTG off of aggro is probably worth looking at.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Sandy Dog was a Dimir Roger, right? That's wild. That is wild to think about. Yeah, I don't have a lot to say about this deck, like where I think the deck should move or go. It feels like you're gonna kind of tweak cards a lot with this deck, depending on what other decks are doing, but like your core shell is pretty similar no matter what you do. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Word. Alright. Let's talk about mono green. Aggro, not the food deck. But before we go on, let's actually ask that. I don't like the food deck. Do you like the food deck?
No, not at all.
Sweet. I know you're not high on mono green as is, because you hate me personally, and you're taking it out on Gym Razor. But but mono green, cool. Food, I don't really like that deck. Kind of too medium, too mopey. Doesn't really do a whole lot if you're looking for actual insight. Mono green aggro, on the other hand, I think is very good. I think it is worse right now because we're seeing a tick up of like the Yorion decks. And I think the Yorion decks, when their draw doesn't stumble, kind of they have enough interaction on the board to keep you at bay. And then when they get to the Yorion turns, they just drown you and it becomes almost impossible to come back. Depending on their build of it. However they have it built, there's just ways to interact with you. But I think Mono Green actually does a better job being Golgari Adventures than like Golgari Adventures does. Because I think the deck has, so it has like 8 removal spells and Primal Might and Ram Through. It has card advantage and like the Great Henge and Vivians and Guruks that you play some number of in the main deck. We saw Room T hit rank 2 on the ladder yesterday, playing like 2 and 2 on the Vivians and a couple Henges. And then you just have these creatures that are pretty beefy. And like Gym Razor, Lovestruck Beast, some number of Questing Beasts sometimes, Yorvo. And what we see happen is you'll present a couple threats and then you'll ramp through. And heaven forbid you like ramp through with a creature that's trample because they're going to take a bunch of damage. And you kind of just jund them out. You just hit them and then they try to play their spell and you remove it. And that's a tempo hit and they lose. And it has the ability to grind if you need to, just like Jund can. And Mono Green, I think, is just like a totally reasonable and fine deck that is getting currently hated out a little bit. But at points this week, I do think Mono Green was the deck to be playing. So, Allie, what do you think of Mono Green?
I have just like never been a fan of Mono Green. I'm sorry, Mason, but I do think it was definitely strong earlier in the week. I think it probably just has like the best mana in the format because it's one color.
Yeah.
And the mana is just like not very good yet, so I think a lot of people were defaulting to Mono Green just because if you have a strong mana base, you start to kind of just have the rest of the wheels in your deck working a lot better than anything else. But I think people have started to build their decks a little better since it's past week one right now, and finally like just kind of, I don't know, again, just understand how to build your deck and what you're looking to beat and how to combat strategies like Mono Green or Rogues or like whatever. So
yeah, I think the clean mana is a huge gain to this deck. Like every single deck we've talked about that wasn't on the wheel except for Mono Red is a two color deck, or two color plus deck, I should say. And having good mana is one of the easiest ways to win a game of Magic. Like how, like think about the card Arkham's Astrolabe and what it did. It just like fixed your mana, right? It just made it so your mana always worked. And that sort of thing is super strong and super impactful and like would not normally be worth a card, like a one mana do nothing thing, but like making it so you always cast your spells lets you play a lot of really powerful stuff. And if your cards are already pretty powerful, like they are with the Mono Green stuff, and your mana's good, that's a great way to like honestly just punish people that are like trying to dirtle or like drew too many tap lands. And I think Mono Green, I think because we have a healthy standard format, all the decks are going to ebb and flow. And I think the trick is that Mono Green's peaks will be smaller than the other decks because Mono Green doesn't have as much room to adapt and still hold that advantage of having good, clean, proactive mana that allows them to get on the board and play that tempo game plan or get out ahead enough so they're, because they can grind, but they can't grind as hard as the other decks. But if you're ahead enough on board, you can grind and try and chip through damage, and it makes it able to, you know, go for a little bit, but not forever. So I do think Mono Green's like peaks are going to be much lower than decks like Green White Yorgon, which will take a couple days to adapt to, especially at first, you know? So yeah, I think Mono Green was really good, like on Wednesday or Thursday of last week, and since then has kind of, you know, dipped off. And hey, that's what a healthy metagame is. You love to see it.
You love to see it.
Also, Gem Razor is great. It's well-positioned. It's good against everything we talked about. Green-White Yorion, Blue-White Yorion, Bant Yorion. We should probably start with Blue-White because that was the first one that appeared. You know, we saw it like last Thursday-ish. That's kind of a way to out-grind the Golgari-ish decks of the world and have some pretty good game against the Mono Greens of the world. And Allie, what do you think of Blue-White Adventures? I'm sorry, Blue-White Yorion, my bad.
I was going to be like, you got a list?
Yeah. It doesn't play Edgewell Innkeeper because the best cards, we don't need those. No, but what do you think of Blue-White Yorion?
I actually haven't seen a lot of it or tried a lot of it. Most of my Yorion testing was just like the green-white Strasky list, and then I'm going to try out Bant today, I think. I don't know. I think the green cards are really strong. I think green and black are probably the most powerful colors still in Magic. So I'm, or in Standard, I guess. So yeah, I think the blue white deck is probably good, and it does beat green white Yorion in the head to head. But I'm interested to see where like Bant falls between the two.
Yeah, I agree with the Blue-White probably beats Green-White. I'm also interested where Bant falls because I did not have a time to play that yet, but I need to. My article this week is all about Yorion decks, and I think Blue-White Yorion, thanks to things like Thassa, God of the Sea, or whatever this Thassa is called, like grinds even harder than the other Yorion decks because like you're either blinking your Yorions, which like leads to these weird loops of happening. Like you have that plus Charming Prince in your deck, or you're just like
constantly unsummon Baron Tolarian Scholar, right? You're just unsummoning a thing where you're bouncing, like you're making a bunch of Aloralos tokens. I don't know how you say it. It's the 2/3 that makes the 3/2 reflection token. You bounce that thing a lot, right? Like you do that sort of thing a bunch, and it kind of just drowns your opponents. You know, they have a really hard time beating that if they're also a grinding deck. But if your opponent's trying to be proactive, like Mono Green, or they're trying to break your deck up with like a little bit of interaction, you know, like Dimir Rogues, you have a really hard time winning. So it's hard for me to really give my seal of approval to blue white Yorion, because it feels like, I assume Bant Yorion does like this even greedier than green white or blue white, sorry, but I haven't played it, so I can't really weigh too much into that. But I assume it's just kind of like the top of the greed pile. And if you go too much in that direction, you know, you kind of expose your flanks. So, interesting. Green-White Yorion, I think we've both played this deck a lot in the last couple days. What do you think of Green-White Yorion?
I've been playing that a lot, and I actually really like it. I think you just accrue a lot of card advantage, and it's been it's been really good for me. I think I'm hesitant to, like, register it, though. I don't know. It feels like people have kind of shifted away from the green decks and Green Black Adventures, so I don't know. I'm, like, feeling going back to Rogues. I don't know. Everything's hard and stressful.
Yeah, it's very hard and stressful. It's the great comedy of the universe that we're talking about this on the day that you have to think about this a lot. It wasn't planned that way. It just turned out to be, like, a happy little accident. But yeah, I think I like the green-white decks a lot, and I'm curious what you think about this, but I think the green-white decks, when they have their high synergy good draws, are almost unbeatable for any deck, which is appealing to me. Like, if you goose into Trail, into Wolf, into Yorion, even the rogue deck kind of has trouble with that sort of draw. Like, Wolf can be a pretty challenging threat to remove. And then you have a lot of ways to kind of move through your deck, whether that's, like, Elvish... it's not Elvish Visionary, it's Llanowar Visionary. Yeah, it's the new one. You have Trail of Crumbs, you have those sort of things. And then you have, like, Yorion to, like, really grind people out once you get there. And then you have, like, Skyclave Apparition to answer a bunch of stuff. And it feels like if Mono Green is, like, the proactive mid-range deck, like the Jund, then, like, Green-White Yorion is, like, weirdly the grindy mid-range deck. I can't think of a better example to compare it to. But, like, maybe, like, Abzan, if you're going to use the modern comparison. And it just feels kind of strong and clean. But then there are draws where, like, you have a couple Trail of Crumbs and, like, a Charming Prince and lands. And you're like, yeah, I'm on 6, I'm going to keep. And your deck just does not function at the same power level as other standard decks. And I think that that's a thing that gets solved in time with deck building. You know, like, we'll figure out, like, what the number should be, what we actually need. But for right now, we're kind of still figuring that stuff all out. And when we get the half of the deck that we know is solid, we're like, you know, the 3/4 of the deck's great. But then sometimes the draws just don't line up super well, and that makes it super awkward. And because you're a 60-card Yorion deck, you don't always have access to your Yorions. So if you hit, like, the part of your deck that's really good at, like, interacting on the ground, and you don't hit your ways to cantrip through, or you need to put, like, your turn Timbo Sombreosis as a land or something like that to actually play, you can't find the Yorion, and that becomes rather frustrating when, like, your deck needs the Yorion normally to kind of push through.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. Bant Yorion, I guess, before we go. I will say this, once again, it's hard to comment too much on it. I haven't played it, and it's also kind of newer. I will say it's a Crokies deck, so it's probably the best. And then after that, I will say that... it seems to me like it is trying to outgreed even the blue-white Yorion deck. And by doing that, we've introduced a lot of tap lands and chances for our mana to be weird. And also these decks kind of play out like tap-out mid-range decks, right? Like the Yorion decks are trying to play to the board and do that sort of thing. And they're not really interested in holding up counter spells or like cycling Shark Typhoon and that sort of thing. And it doesn't... seem to mesh super well from what I've seen. Like when I look at the decks, they look a lot like the other two builds, but with like some access to like counter spells and stuff in the main, or like Omen of the Sea, and it just doesn't seem quite worth it to me with the current iterations. And maybe if you tune that deck more, it would become better. But like right now, I'm not a huge fan of what the 60, or I guess the 80 is looking like. Do you have any thoughts? I know you haven't played it yet either. So do you have any thoughts on it? Like, or opinions on what I've said?
I've just been looking at Sam Black's list, I suppose. And yeah, I mean, it basically does just look like the green-white list, which I've been a fan of, splashing for Glass Pool Mimic. And yeah, it actually looks like the, oh, and negates in the sideboard. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't really know what else to say about it.
You're good. There's not much to say. It's an awkward spot where like that deck is very fresh at the time of this recording, and so we haven't had a lot of chance to play with it. But you know, sometimes you don't have to play games to have an initial opinion. So just thought it might be worth it. Well, I think that is going to do it today for Standard. Allie, I'm going to put you in the awkward position where I ask you what you would play, even though that's all you're going to think about for the next 12 hours. And it might change at this time. But if you had to register at this exact moment when I click in record, what are you clicking?
It's probably going to come down between a Yorion pile and Rogues. So I guess for now I'd say Rogues, but I haven't tested it.
Sure. Yet. That's fair. I mean, a lot of other people have tested, so we know it's reasonable. Totally a reasonable choice. I want to say Monogreen. I want to end the podcast with Gym Razor, but I do think I would end up playing Green-White Yorion and just try to like find some way to up the consistency of my draws just a little bit. I don't know what exact card I would put in there, but like there, I know that green has a lot of weird card advantage, so I would look at towards doing something with that to get my Yorion draws to be more consistent. But yeah, I think those decks are both super strong. And totally reasonable if you're trying, if you're listening to this podcast, you're like, dang, Standard sounds fun. Allie, no cap, Standard's great right now, right? It's just the best. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I hate Rogues, but Standard's been really good.
I hate Rogues, but yeah, I guess it's pretty good. I like that. All right, well, thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode. Once again, if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/CCMTG. Look at the benefits there. You can ask questions on the show, join the Discord community, all of that. So we'll see y'all next week for another episode of Constructed Criticism.